Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Today, we'll be talking holiday books and cookbooks doing good. But up first, food headlines. All right, folks. Have you seen all of the holiday lists that are being put out by all these publications and magazines and blogs and websites? One of my favorites that came out last week is the New York Times did their cookbook for the holiday list. I was so excited because I saw two books. One actually, Vintage Cakes. She was just on Hot Grease like 2 weeks ago. And she got a nice shout out on the New York Times cookbook holiday list to buy. What else? There was another book on there. Let me see what was the other book that was on there that I was like, huh, they've been on Hot Grease. I know what I would add to that list. The Brown Betty Bakery Cookbook just came out. And I was like, you know what? I would totally add that to the list. What else did I see on there? I know that was the most notable. I'm so into the Vintage Cakes one. And also Southern Comfort, which is a new book that recently came out. I don't have it yet, but I'm so excited to get that. So, yeah, check it out. New York Times holiday cookbook list. Again, I would add the Brown Betty cookbook to that list. And also, you know what else? Alana Chernell's book, The Homemade Pantry. I love that book. I've been using that nonstop the entire year. So there you have it. I should do a full list of like my favorite cookbooks of 2012. Maybe a future show before the year ends. All right, folks, there you have it. Food headlines for this week. We're going to take a short break and we're going to come back and talk holiday cookies. Keep listening to Hot Grease on the Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Nature's Wrath by the Budos Band on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. We're talking holiday cookies. It's the holiday. It's officially December. Today is December 3rd. And in the studio today to talk all things good cheer is Stephanie Alexander. She is the pastry chef at Seersucker Brooklyn. Stephanie, welcome to Hot Grease.
Hi, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad to have you here. I'm a dessert fiend. I could just totally have desserts and skip, you know, regular meals.
I could tell when you came and ate at Seersucker.
I'm sitting here thinking about, oh my gosh, I think the last five shows I've talked about desserts. It's crazy. So I have to ask you, did you grow up making cookies at the holidays?
I would say so, yeah. Big time. I made huge trays and I would bring them to school bigger than I could carry.
Oh, just, really?
Yeah. I went pretty all out.
I missed that. I was sitting thinking like of last week, like, oh, I should make, you know, come up with a new tradition of making cookies. I don't remember making cookies. I remember a lot of, you know, pies and definitely cakes at Christmas time, but I missed the cookie train.
Well, time to get on the cookie train.
So what do you suggest to folks, you know, who are sitting at home thinking, okay, I need to make cookies for gifts or for holiday parties? What should people make? Should they do chocolate chip or should they try the gingerbread or what?
Yeah, don't overwhelm yourself. Pick one, two recipes and just kind of stick with it. Maybe a nice sugar cookie and then you can jazz it up in different ways. You can turn it into a snickerdoodle. You can turn it into just a sugar glazed top.
Okay, so a good sugar cookie recipe. And I think, so cookie cutter, should people invest in cookie cutters?
Or yeah, buy like a little set. And every holiday you can buy a new set and you'll have a collection.
Okay, so I'm curious about gingerbread. I've never really made a gingerbread cookie, and I'm so fascinated because I was looking online on Pinterest. I don't know if you did. You know you're a Pinterest star. Speaking of Pinterest,
no,
yeah. If you go on Pinterest, your pecan pie. I guess you had a pecan pie recipe in a magazine.
Yeah. In Glamour.
Yeah. You should totally Google it. But I went on Pinterest to look at gingerbread houses, and oh my gosh, it's some crazy gingerbread houses and gingerbread ornaments. What's the deal with gingerbread cookies? How are they able to like to stay, I guess, together and not crumble? And can you eat them when they're ornaments? How long do they last?
I mean, I've made them as ornaments, and then you put like glue in it. You can put Elmer's glue, and then they last forever. Yeah, but let's not eat those.
Okay.
How about regular like gingerbread house type thing? Yeah, they're going to be pretty dry though. So it's not going to be the kind that you want to eat for Christmas. It's a little bit of a different recipe, I would say, with more flour.
Okay, so the sculpting kind has more flour, and it's you can eat it, but not so much, particularly if you put Elmer's glue.
Yeah, no.
But if you're making just cute, fancy ones to give as gifts for the holidays, again, so most gingerbread recipes, are they pretty basic, just like the sugar cookie?
Yeah, don't be intimidated. Because really, it's just the spices and molasses, and that's all that's different than, let's say, a chocolate chip cookie.
Ah, okay. So, I'm trying to think, what else? I saw an article or something today about people were talking about fruitcakes. I want to switch and talk about other things that people usually make at, you know, the holidays, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa time that they are not going to make any other time of the year. Fruitcakes, I definitely think, what are the things you think? The big layer cakes are like a big deal at Christmas?
Yeah. I don't know why it's such a tradition, but it is. And the pies seem to have gone from Thanksgiving to Christmas too.
Oh, okay.
Right? So it really, I see it having to do with what culture you brought up in, like the Mexican wedding cookies.
Oh my gosh, I love them.
It seems like every culture has their own version of that.
Yeah.
So if you're not doing cookies, like some places do cakes, pies, mousses.
Yeah. Okay, so I want to talk this fruitcake thing. I have not had a fruitcake that I like.
You don't seem very impressed.
No, I have a great aunt who really I see as my culinary hero. She's one of the first folks I saw poach an egg, and really she, you know, lived to be almost 90. She was born in the early 1900s. She loved a freaking fruitcake, and I always thought it was so disgusting. What is it that people don't like? Is it a texture or...
I'm thinking that it's all those candied fruits that they have in there, and we don't eat those normally, like the candied orange, the candied plums. Those are items that we really never eat, and I wonder why.
Have you made a fruitcake
recently? I have not made a fruitcake.
Oh man, you have to make a fruitcake, huh? Tell me, give me the best recipe.
I guess we got to find that not run-of-the-mill fruitcake that...
I know. And what's the other one? Is it called Stolen?
Yeah, the Stolen's tasty. The Stolen's
so
really
what's
tasty.
What's different from the Stolen and the fruitcake? What are the differences?
I know about the Stolen. It's more of a yeasted bread. So think like coffee cake almost.
Uh-huh.
And then it has like almond paste in it. And it doesn't have to have a lot of dried fruit and nuts or not. And then they usually dip it in a bath of butter to help like
really?
Seal it, because then it will last for a little bit. And come on, it's like a steak.
Yeah, and it's usually like it's like round. Is it round or either?
I would say it's like oblong.
Okay. Yeah, I see.
Go for the Stolen.
The Stolen. Okay. I'm trying to figure out what else. What else would we put kind of off the beaten path? Christmas holiday
items. Let's see. I mean, granted, Hanukkah. It's a cookie. I've been really into Lebkuchen.
Tell me more.
And so it's slightly gingerbread-esque in a way. And they put it on a wafer, like a rice paper.
Yeah.
And they have it in like a sugar glaze with like three little almonds on top. And it has those spices that you would associate with a ginger cookie.
What's the origin?
Like Scandinavian, I think. Yeah. Okay.
Cool. We're gonna take a quick break, but I want to come back and I want to talk eggnog.
Sounds good.
So listeners, keep listening. We'll be back with more Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to River Serpentine by the Budos Band on the heritageradionetwork.org.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. Full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can check us out all of our show archives and show listings at heritageradionetwork.org. We're also on Stitcher, and you can find Hot Grease on iTunes. If you're just tuning in, we're talking with Stephanie Alexander. She is the pastry chef at one of my favorite restaurants, Southern style, Southern influence restaurants in Brooklyn, New York, Seersucker. So look, Stephanie, you this summer, was it this summer or this fall? I read your recipe for buttermilk ice cubes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, can we do the same thing with eggnog?
Sure, why not? Why not?
What would we put it in? Because I think you were using the buttermilk cubes in Concord grape soda.
I mean, I would even just like it in, like, milk. It sounds like it would be tasty in milk. But if you put the rum in there, it's not going to freeze in those ice cubes. How about we just put it into a rum?
That sounds really good.
Have the spiced milk ice cubes, put them in the rum, and sure, it's a little bit boozier, but...
So what's the key to the buttermilk ice cubes or cubes and the eggnog cubes?
No trick, just maybe make sure you have a simple syrup that you use. Okay. With the buttermilk, you don't want to cook it at all.
Okay.
It'll separate. So if you did an eggnog milk, you could heat it up and add some nutmeg and any other spices you wanted for your eggnog.
And you just use a regular tray?
Mm-hmm. Anything you want. You can use a regular ice cube tray if you want, though.
Cool. Yeah. Cool. Okay. I love that idea of making those cubes and then just putting it in rum. People would just freak out if they saw that, right? Like, oh my gosh, how did you do that? And speaking of entertaining, so I was in Seersucker, about a month ago? And I'm always blown away, but I definitely was blown away by all the desserts.
Thank you.
That I tried. Oh my gosh. I think I had the buttermilk pie. What did I have? Do you remember?
The chess pie.
The chess pie.
The chocolate pudding, which is our take on a Mississippi mud pie.
Yeah.
And you had an apple dessert of some sort, too.
Yeah, it was so good. And you know, this is a thing I'm trying to figure out. How the heck do I turn my at-home desserts into a fancy restaurant dessert plating? Like, oh my gosh, how do I get my ice cream scooped out in an oval shape?
Well, it takes a little bit of practice, but you could always start just buying those commercial ice cream scoops that are round.
Mm-hmm.
We do those in the restaurants too, and the key is just have a little bit of warm water and just keep practicing with the ice cream.
So what do you think are some tips for people who are entertaining this holiday season and they're plating cookies or they're plating a cake? How can they put an extra pizzazz on their serving tray? Or
let's say you're presenting a cake, use what's in that cake to try to garnish it with. Let's say you have chocolate, you know, use chocolate shavings, you can buy stuff that are decorations. And then when you go to cut that cake, use those elements in it. Let's say it's a raspberry cake.
Yeah.
Add some raspberries and blueberries, and plating will bring it up a notch.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's, I know, I think people don't really, a lot of times you can have some really whack desserts, but they're so gorgeous. I mean, I think about it, you're like, oh, this is so gorgeous. And you taste it and you're like, huh. So that's always a trick, particularly if you're buying something from somewhere. So I have to ask you, not only are you the pastry chef, I only mentioned Seersucker, but you're also the pastry chef and in charge of all the pastries at Smith Canteen.
Yes.
Which is a few doors down in the Carroll Gardens neighborhood. I absolutely love Smith Canteen. Would you say that the desserts at Smith Canteen are Southern inspired, or would you just say that they're just nice comfort desserts?
I would say comfort desserts, but we do have that little whisper of Southern talking to us all the time. Mm-hmm. So we sneak it in there when we can.
And, okay, so you told me you're not from the South. You're a Midwest girl.
I'm not, but I am planning on moving to New Orleans, if that makes any
sense. Oh, really? Oh, wow. That's a whole nother South.
It's New Orleans. It's different, yeah.
Yeah, New Orleans. You have the South, and then you have New Orleans. I definitely will say that. So how has it been, you know, being immersed in Southern culture? Because Rob is definitely a Southern boy, without a doubt. Was there a huge learning curve for you in terms of, you know, working in Jean George? You worked in some of the top restaurants doing pastry here in New York City, and then going to a place that really is serious about Southern food culture.
Yeah, I mean, there was a learning curve, but I feel like a lot of the staples I could see in other parts of the country. So, yeah, it's a Mississippi mud pie, but let's say in the North we have something very similar.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, I had to do my homework a little bit, but it's nothing I've never seen before.
Yeah, like the chess pie. I know, I mean, I'm a huge buttermilk pie person. And actually, I couldn't answer this question. One of my friends, Angry Wayne, who owns Lone Star Taco, was like, what's the difference between a buttermilk pie and a chess pie? I never even responded to his request on Instagram because I have no clue. I think it has something to do with eggs or something. What do you think?
Okay, I made a buttermilk pie the other day. And the only difference I can see is that buttermilk pie has buttermilk and less butter.
And the chess pie, does it have more lemon, I feel like, or lemon juice? I don't put lemon juice in my buttermilk pie.
Yeah, I put a tiny bit of lemon zest in my chess pie. So maybe that's a difference, too. It seems like a chess pie is a custard made with butter, maybe, and a buttermilk pie is a custard made with buttermilk.
I'll pass that along to him.
So it sounds like the chess pie is going to win out on that.
Okay, yeah. I love the chess pie. I mean, they have the same texture, and it's just like a different flavor. I don't know what it is. I have no clue. And lastly, I have to ask you, I think a lot of times people think pastry and at least me, when I think of pastry chef, I only think dessert. I have to remember that you guys can do savory stuff.
Oh, yeah, we can.
What would you say is a great savory dessert for December that embodies everything in December?
Well, I try to bring out the herbs whenever I can. Mm-hmm. So when I think of a savory dessert and my go-to at Christmas,
yeah,
it's not super savory, but rosemary caramels with sea salt.
Ooh,
that's my like signature.
Ooh, wow.
So it's your classic kind of caramels, but with the rosemary, oh, I can't stop eating them.
Oh, my gosh. Do you sprinkle, like, sea salt on top, or is it just straight caramels and rosemary with no...
No, definitely sea salt, as much as the person can handle.
Oh, my gosh. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That sounds totally amazing. I'm so happy you came by. This went by so quickly. We could talk all day desserts.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. And give folks the info if they're interested in checking you out and Seersucker out on social media networks and all that good stuff.
Yeah, check us out on Twitter. That's probably the best place to reach us. You can send me at PBKLYN. That's like Peanut Butter Brooklyn. That's my name.
Ah.
Or Smith Canteen or Seersucker Brooklyn. Like, you can send me any of your holiday kind of baking questions and I'll answer them.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. There you have it, listeners. Get ready, get in the kitchen, start baking. Stephanie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
For joining us on Hot Grease. Listeners, going to take a short break and come back with more Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
You're listening to Golden Dunes by the Budos Band on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Today's show is being sponsored by White Oak Pastures. And thank you, Joe, for engineering today's show. Also, let me give a Southern Girls hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. The location of two sustainable shipping containers known as Heritage Radio Network. Every now and then on Hot Grease, we give you type and tell. It's the grown-up version of show and tell, where we give you something great to tell all your friends about. On the phone today to talk cookbooks doing good is Babette Papai. Babette, welcome to Hot Grease.
Nicole, it's so nice to hear from you. I haven't seen you in such a long time.
I know. I failed to mention you are also the founder of Bakespace.com, the fabulous Bakespace.com. And for some of our listeners, they may not know about Bakespace. Give us a quick and dirty on Bakespace.com.
Sure. Well, Bakespace is kind of like the Facebook for foodies. So if you like sharing recipes, you basically start your own online kitchen. You can upload your recipes and you can share them with friends. What's cool is that it's a recipe swap component. So anytime you upload your recipes, your friends who are in your network get those recipes automatically. So instead of having to, look for mom's, sweet potato pie recipe, you can just go into her account and find it. We've been around since 2006, 12 Webby awards. I feel like we're like the grandmother of the web.
Pretty much. I didn't realize you've been around so long. Wow. Congrats to you.
But there's so many great recipe sites that have started, early on, like in 2000, I think, All Recipes has been around forever. I think like 13 or 14 years. But we took it up a little bit of a notch and made it very social, because when you think about dining around the table or being in the kitchen, there's such a social component that isn't just about the food. It's about the conversations that happen around food. So, that was sort of the inspiration of why we started the site. And it sort of evolved from there. And then obviously, we have our conference, Tech Munch. So that's how we met, which I was so excited to meet you. Michelle. Yeah, Michelle Stevens with Cupcakes Take the Cake. I think she has put us in contact with some of the best food bloggers in New York City.
Yeah, speaking of contact and you being really a leader and taking things to the next level, like Tech Munch, where you've it's in Philly, it's in here in New York City. I think you've done it in Boston. What I'm really excited about is the new Google Plus shows that you're doing. There are not a lot of people, in my opinion, in the food space that are really using Google Plus to have conversations or with their community. So I see that you have a whole roster. I mean, at this point, you've done like how many shows on the Bakespace Google Plus?
I don't know. We've done under 20. So we do one a week.
Oh, wow.
And what's fun is that, you know, Google is such an amazing platform for people who want to create content but don't want to have to deal with a lot of the headaches of a technical show. You know, uploading to YouTube, they process all that for you. So it really was a platform that we could just focus on the food and focus on the community, and we didn't have to necessarily worry about, you know, making sure that technically everything was okay and going from camera and switching things. They do that all for us. And they have been an amazing supporter. They sponsored our Tech Munch Philly event with their Google Local group. And I think they're going to be with us through 2013 as well. But we're so proud. I mean, each week we have a new person in food. You know, we've had J.M. Hirsch from the Associated Press to cookbook authors, to, you know, food bloggers. Our last show, we just talked about food photography. And it allows us to, like, really dive into a topic. Our co-hosts are Jeff Houck from the Tampa Tribune. He's the food editor there. We have Renee Lynch from the L.A. Times. We have Douglas Welch from WelchWrite.com. We have myself from BakeSpace.com. And then we bring on someone really cool, which you have to come on our show.
Yeah, I need to come on. Yeah, I totally would love to. Yeah, I need to do that.
And it'll be nice to be on the other side where you're not asking, you know, we can ask you with all the questions.
Yeah, no, that's always interesting. You know, what I really am also, you're doing so many exciting things. And, you know, when I look at today is December 3rd, it's the holidays, people are cooking, but also this is a time that people are doing a lot of giving. And one of the cool things, one of your projects, the DIY cookbook, I think you have a few people or at least one person that has used that platform to actually raise money for organization. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we have, you know, we have four components to our company. We have the online food community, which has a whole bunch of cookbook buyers who want to have more recipes. We have the Kitchen Party show on Google Plus, which is, if you just go to Google Plus and type in bakespace.com, you can find us, which highlights great people in the food community. We have a the Food Blogger Conference, which all the food bloggers we meet every single year. And then we have this amazing platform. After we started talking to all the food bloggers and we have a million home cooks on our platform, we started talking to them. We said, you know, what is it that you love to do? And they said, well, we love making recipes, but we don't know how to necessarily monetize those. And then we produced Cupcake Camp LA and realized that all these nonprofits had a really hard time scaling their fundraising. And when you think back to, like, the beginning of time, people have always shared recipes. People have always used community cookbooks to not only archive recipes from a community, either being a local thing or being seasonal or just highlighting recipes from a community, but they've also been able to raise some amazing money for nonprofits. The problem is when you're building a cookbook, is getting all the recipes, getting all the photos, putting it together, publishing it, putting it into a book, printing out the book, shipping those books, and then having to go one by one and sell those. So we streamlined that entire process and basically made a digital version of that as an iPad app. So now anyone can create a cookbook as both an iPad app and an ebook, complete with videos and photos, which is really fun for a nonprofit because they have some sort of video component, or they have their Twitter links and their Facebook links that are trying to promote and build their community. So when they go out and do their fundraising, it scales for them easily because usually it's run by, like, less than two people run a nonprofit, you know, and it's really a small nonprofit. So we've worked with some great people. Angel Acres, Horsehaven Rescue is one of our big nonprofits. They're out of Pennsylvania. They rescue horses that are being sold for human consumption to the slaughterhouses that are racehorses, that are beautiful horses that are, you know, have life in them and can be rehomed. But they're sold for like $200. It's crazy. So they have been trying to figure out ways to monetize and scale their fundraising. So they started with our platform. And I think they have like 2,000 sales so far.
Oh, wow.
In the last couple months. Yeah, and I think on average an ebook sells like 100 copies. So when you look at it in terms of how that could scale for them, they didn't have to go out and find 2,000 people to actually buy their cookbook. And they're also able to, in the cookbook, it has links to their Facebook and Twitter handle that open up within it. So now they can use that cookbook, even if they wanted to do a free one, just to build their network, too. So when they do go to that yearly, you know, push for money, they can say, hey, you know, remember this? Remember those great recipes we gave you? Like, you know, how about you throw us a few extra bucks and buy this other cookbook? And since it's a utility and you're giving something of value back, people really respond to that. It's not just, will my $10 donation make a difference in this organization? Sure, but if I spend $2.99 on a cookbook, I get something out of it too. And the community gets, they constantly can reach back to you. Once you download a cookbook, you're basically subscribed to their network. So anytime they have a new cookbook, you'll be able to see that. So it's really, it's just, it's been the, probably the highlight of my career is building something that can give back.
I totally love it. I think that is a perfect platform for the everyday person and particularly for small organizations to really, really raise money. Yeah. People love to give something. If they give money and then they actually get something physical, they get super excited. So
also that you can see that it's a real, you know, if you have video on the cookbook and you see it, you know, pictures from the organization and you can look at their Twitter handle and their Facebook page, you kind of, you build a sense of like a direct connection to that community. It's not just an email blast or it's not just, you know, like us on Facebook, but you actually can see that these are real people and you can kind of track what they're doing with the cash, which has been, you know, it's, you know, at this time of year, anyone can just say, you know, donate money to this, support this,
right.
And you're like, is this really true? So,
yeah,
are you gonna make a cookbook?
I am actually working on a cookbook, but I'm sitting here thinking about like two or three organizations that I need to direct them straight to bakespace.com and tell them to click on the top right tab so they can do this thing. I think it's a wonderful fundraising opportunity. But
thank
you so much for coming on Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Folks who want to find you, they can go to bakespace.com or you're on Twitter at simply bakespace.
Awesome.
Happy holidays to you.
Thanks, Nicole. Well, we're going to have you on our show too, and we will share this with our community. We love your show, so we're just absolutely honored to be a part of it.
Oh no, thank you. Have a great one. See you in 2013.
You too. I'll see you soon. Happy holidays.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Listeners, thanks so much for listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can always catch me live every Monday at 3:30 Eastern Time on heritageradionetwork.org. But until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.